Chapter 24. Sims knocked on the doorframe to my office.
Penny for your thoughts, sir?
Come on in, sit down. Sims, I've been thinking. I waited for a smart-ass remark from the beer can, and nothing came. Skippy's silence was surprising me. We got lucky at Detroit. We get lucky a lot. That can't continue. That was a remark Skippy could not resist, so his avatar popped to life on my desk. Joe, you are right about that, and you don't even know how the universe really works. Believe me, your luck will run out someday soon. I hate it when you hint at shit like that. That is all I can tell you, Joe. It's not just a restriction in my programming. I can't tell you because that knowledge is incredibly dangerous. You will have to trust that I am doing this for your benefit. Thanks, Skippy. I appreciate it. And only secondarily because it is so much fun screwing with you. Asshole. Whatever. Anyway, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking with Colonel Sims. Listen, we need a backup plan. Not just a plan, a backup.
Like what? I'm not following you.
A place a group of humans could live if something bad happens to Earth. A beta site.
A beta site?
Sims pursed her lips. It doesn't have to be called that. I didn't want to get dragged off topic by an argument over what to name the place. Eventually, the planet would have its own name. It's a place where humanity and our culture can continue in case Earth is destroyed or we are enslaved by one side or the other.
I get the concept, sir. It's something the previous crew talked about a lot, especially when we were on Gingerbread. You know this idea comes from Stargate, the TV show, not the original movie. They had a planet where they could evacuate people to, only they called it the Alpha Site.
Oh. I did know that old show.
Yeah. Sir. She gave me the side eye. Why are you planning to set up a beta site?
Unspoken was that she thought my energy should be devoted to the current problem of two warships carrying murderous kitties to Earth. Because. I craned my neck around her to see into the corridor, then pressed the button to close the door. I owe you the truth, Sims. We've been together since the beginning, and we've been through a lot of crazy shit. Shaking my head, I flashed a wry smile that quickly faded. I really, truly do not think we're getting out of this one. It's just too tough. The Maxulks? My shoulders shook as a chill ran up my spine. We can't take out two of their warships, not even one ship, with this worn-out tub we're flying. At some point, I need to give up the fantasy that we can accomplish the impossible. A beta site might not be our fallback plan. It will probably be our primary plan. She arched an eyebrow.
How do you figure that, sir?
If we can't stop those ships... No, wait. If we don't have a realistic plan to stop those ships, then I'm not taking this ship into combat. There is no point in futile gestures, and this ship is the only one humanity has. If it looks like the target ships are on their way to Earth and we can't stop them, then I'm taking the Dutchman back to Earth. I'll surrender myself and tell the UN they need to use the ship to find a beta site and evac people there ASAP while they can. She gave me the side eye. Hard. There was accusation in that look, and I did not blame her one bit.
Sir, I need you to bottom line this for me. You're giving up trying to stop those ships?
No, not now. Not yet. We'll get their flight plans and see if that gives us any ideas, but... I slumped back into my chair. If it truly is simply impossible to destroy those two ships without the Maxulks knowing they were lost to hostile action, then we need to cut our losses. Sims did not look happy at all. She was thinking I had already given up, mentally and emotionally. Whatever concerns she had, she kept them to herself. No doubt when she left my office, she would ask Skippy and Agatha about me.
A beta site is truly a last resort? If aliens destroy Earth, what will stop them from hitting the beta site also?
Getting the discussion back on track made me sit up straight in my chair. We will avoid that by making it impossible for bad guys to get to the beta site, like locating it way outside the galaxy. Or we can make the voyage to the beta site a one-way trip, so if aliens do capture Earth, they won't be able to find the location of the beta site. Nobody who goes there as a colonist can ever come back to Earth.
How would that work? The ship has to come back.
The ship will come back. We might need 5 or more trips to establish a viable colony. As I said that, I wondered how much time we would have before the Maxulks reached Earth and flights to the beta site would be cut off. The crew and Nagatha and Skippy will need to know where the site is, of course, but we would keep the number of people involved to a minimum. It's not going to be easy.
No, it won't. The governments on Earth will want to know where the site is. Plus, colonists won't like the idea of going in blindly.
Ah, we can show them videos of the place.
Videos made in daylight. No stars in the video, so people can't use a star map to figure out where the place is.
Sims frowned and squinted, thinking hard.
We need to ask Skippy, but I think the video needs to be altered. The spectrum of each star is unique. People could determine where the planet is by analyzing the sunlight.
Crap. This is complicated. You're right. It will be hard to get people to sign up for a one-way trip under those conditions.
Not really.
She tapped a finger against her chin.
Earth has billions of people. All we need is a couple thousand people looking for adventure, for a fresh start, a chance to create something new. It should be easy, actually.
Yeah, except we would end up with an entire planet full of adventure junkies. She shook her head.
That's good. It should be hard to be selected as a colonist. We need people who are tough and committed, people who won't want to bail at the first sign of trouble, because there will be trouble.
Right, because bailing out will not be an option. The only way a beta site works as a backup for Earth is if no one, or only a very few people on Earth, know the location of the colony.
If aliens do reach Earth, people who know the colony's location will need to evac?
That, or... I tapped the back of my neck. Wear a suicide patch, like we do on away missions. Thinking about the keepers we picked up during our last mission gave me an idea. Better to use some sort of suicide implant, something that can't be peeled off.
This is a depressing conversation.
The topic is setting up a secure backup in case Earth is nuked to oblivion, so...
It's never going to be the feel-good movie of the year.
She flashed a rueful grin that just as quickly faded.
Does it really matter whether aliens find out where the beta site is? The whole point of locating it outside the galaxy or near a dormant wormhole is that aliens can't get there even if they want to.
We don't know yet if we can connect to wormholes outside the galaxy, and Skippy told me he can't guarantee a future wormhole shift won't bring that dormant wormhole back online, I explained. Also, remember, if aliens reach Earth, they're going to learn that we have been manipulating wormholes and how we've been doing that.
Skippy has been manipulating wormholes, not us.
Yeah, but even Skippy needs a wormhole controller module. He says even the senior species don't know what that device is. They know it is something that elders created, but they don't know its purpose. That's why we were able to steal one. The Kristang at the asteroid base had no idea how valuable it is. Once the senior species find out what a wormhole controller module does, they'll begin to study them.
Sure, except they can't use one without Skippy.
They can't use one now. The senior species do have the ability to create connections to higher levels of spacetime. That is how Skippy controls and feeds power to the thing.
Shit, I didn't know that.
I glanced out the door to assure we were still speaking privately. To be certain, I pressed the button to slide the door closed. Skippy told me the Maxulks, even the Rindaloo, are a long way from figuring out how to make a wormhole controller do anything useful. The spiders have only the rudimentary basics of the theory needed, and the rotten kitties don't even have that. But to be safe, I prefer we keep the beta site's location a secret. That removes the incentive for vengeful aliens to try getting there. They can expend their energies on killing each other.
True. I had forgotten that the UN planned to seize this ship partly because Skippy had programmed our wormhole controller to work without him. That's how they planned to go through the wormhole near Earth to contact the Jirapatha.
He programmed it to work one time without him, and we still have no idea how it works.
That reminds me. I snapped my fingers.
I need to ask Skippy to leave that knowledge out of the info he is sharing with us lowly monkeys. That knowledge is way too dangerous for us to have.
Sir, I'll think about the logistics of setting up a colony.
Assume conditions on the planet are only marginally habitable, someplace unpleasant like Newark. We might have to settle for whatever we can find.
Newark wasn't so bad.
It wasn't? I raised an eyebrow at that remark.
I was born and raised in Washington State, she replied. Rainy, cloudy, and cool most of the year is what I'm used to.
Northern Maine is not exactly a tropical paradise either, but living on Newark sucked. It snowed during summer on the equator. You know what the worst part was?
Sir?
When we found those skeletons, and Skippy discovered the planet used to be a nice place. That really sucked. There was probably a more eloquent way to say it, but poetry is not in my skill set. She looked at me with a frown that implied me saying sucked was an insult to the civilization that had been exterminated. You know what I mean, Sims. She was still giving me a hurt, accusing look.
Straight up, sir, I need to know whether you're going to give 100% to stopping the Maxults from reaching Earth. Straight up, Colonel Sims. I offered her a solemn fist bump and met her eyes while she returned the gesture. The fucking universe may quit on us, but I won't. She stood up and snapped a salute, a gesture for dramatic effect because we didn't typically salute aboard the ship.
That's all I need to hear, sir. I'll ask Skippy to help. NASA must have some research on requirements for setting up a colony on a habitable world.
While the crew was ecstatic about our success at stealing pixies, my own mood turned me into Joe Buzzkill. The ship was jumping toward a Maxalt's automated relay station I selected because it was isolated and relatively close, and Smythe was in my office discussing lessons learned from the theft on Detroit. The most important lesson I had learned was, let's not ever do that again. It was too risky, and too many things could have gone wrong on top of the things that had gone wrong. The fact that the operation had ultimately been successful did not change the disaster that would have smacked down on humanity if the Maxalts discovered humans inside one of their most secure facilities. The whole operation had been reckless, desperately reckless. The only reason we could excuse our recklessness was because we were absolutely desperate. We still do not have a plan to destroy two Maxalt ships. I looked down at my laptop after Smythe praised me for having created a daring and clever plan to steal the pixies.
Sorry. I didn't mean to.
That is quite all right, sir, he assured me with a curt wave of a hand. I prefer to talk about future plans rather than congratulating each other. That is what medals are for. And beers. Someday you need to let me buy you a beer. Come to Hereford, sir, and we'll drink a few pints together. Be warned, the lads there will not allow either of us to pay for anything. Well, I grinned. It's the thought that counts. There's an idea I've been kicking around in my head, if you would like to hear. Please, I would love to hear it. Skippy?
Yes?
Of course he had been listening. Now his avatar popped to life on the desk between me and Smythe. I scooted my chair to the side so Grand Admiral Skippy's giant hat didn't block my view. Colonel Smythe has something he wants to discuss.
Right.
Smythe leaned forward, skipping the formalities.
Mr. Skippy, I've heard you can compress yourself into something the size of a lipstick tube.
That is correct. Why do you care?
I care because that is about the size of an anti-ship railgun dart, Smythe explained. We could load your temporarily shrunken self into a railgun and launch you at a Maxalt ship. After you impact, you expand to the size of perhaps a small moon and destroy the ship.
Skippy opened his mouth to reply, but I beat him to it. There was an obvious flaw in Smythe's plan, and I preferred he hear it politely from me rather than being mocked and insulted by the beer can.
That would only take care of one ship, I asked with a raised eyebrow.
Precisely, Smythe nodded curtly. That is why Skippy needs to expand so greatly. Before we launch him, we need to get the two enemy ships to fly in formation, or within several thousand kilometers. That would—
Sorry, Colonel Smythe, Skippy interrupted before I could stop him.
Unfortunately, Joe already tried this plan with me. Good effort on your part. However, there are several issues you did not consider. First, the Flying Dutchman no longer has a functioning railgun. I was forced to remove that weapon system after—
Yes, I remember that bit of trivia.
Smythe's reserve slipped just a bit, a flash of irritation showing through. He did not like being lectured to and belittled by an arrogant beer can.
Also, I remember the space for the railgun still runs down the center of the forward hull, and that many of the accelerator magnets are still in place. When we were in the Roach Motel, we specifically took aboard components to repair our railgun system.
True, true. Skippy was chastened, something that never happened when he talked to me. What you do not know is I have very carefully examined those components we took from the junkyard, and many of them have microscopic flaws that render them unsuitable— Unless you want to destroy this ship by firing an unsafe railgun. Joe and I discussed the railgun during our mission to rescue Paradise from the infected keepers. He agreed with me that restoring the railgun to operation would take resources we need so we can keep the ship flying.
That is true, Smythe. I nodded to the Avatar. If we truly needed it, the railgun could be put back into service temporarily. In this case—
Skippy interrupted me again. In this case, we do not need it. Colonel Smythe, what you do not know is what Joe should have known, yet he proposed this same idea to me because, unlike you, he is a bonehead. While it is true I can adjust my footprint in this space-time, I can only do that within certain preset limits, small as a lipstick, large as an oil drum, and only for a short time. To expand my local footprint to the size of a moon, even a small moon, is something I can only do once. Going larger than an oil drum is only possible if I lose containment, and if that happens, it would be catastrophic for me.
Bollocks, Smythe spat. Apologies, Mr. Skippy. I truly thought that might be the answer to our dilemma.
No need to apologize. Joe thought the same thing, and he should have known better. After saluting the Avatar with one finger, I turned my attention to the SAS officer in my office.
My apologies, Smythe. There are 100 ideas I discussed with Skippy, and I used a hand to mimic an aircraft going down in flames to crash onto my desk. Boom. He shot them all down.
Some of Joe's ideas, Skippy giggled, were really stupid. Entertaining, but stupid.
Smythe and I chatted about other issues for a short time. Then he left to continue the Star Team's intensive training. He looked tired, and he looked happier than he had looked in a long time. If he was worried about being arrested for treason or insubordination if we ever returned to Earth, he certainly didn't show it. After Smythe left, I called the beer can again.
Hey, Skippy, I have a question for you. I am kinda busy right now explaining to Nagatha how to reboot the main reactor from a cold shutdown, so forgive me that I don't have time or energy to insult you like usual.
I appreciate it. Different subject. Nagatha does not already know how to do that?
She knows the list of instructions in the official operating manual for that reactor, and we now have a lot of experience with how the reactor actually functions, considering all the modifications I had to make, so I am transferring my practical knowledge to her, so what's up? Make it quick, please.
My idea for you to expand your footprint and destroy a ship.
No, that was Smythe's idea. You should have known better, so you mentioning it does not count as an idea.
What about it?
Doing that would essentially be suicide for you, right?
I would not actually die, as my higher functions would continue to some extent, but yes, my connection to higher space-time would be permanently cut off, so I would not be able to do all the incredible things that make me Skippy the Magnificent. It would be like when I was trapped in a small corner of myself by the Nasty Worm.
Ah, crap. Would you be drunk dialing me at 0:30 to marvel at the universe?
I have no idea what you're talking about, Joe.
Yeah, that's the problem. Anywho, I haven't gotten to my original question yet.
This is you being quick about it, as I requested?
In Skippy time, eons have passed since we began this boring conversation, Joe. Continents have collided, creating jagged mountain ranges soaring toward the sky. Over millions of Skippy time years, erosion has worn those once lofty mountains down into lumpy rolling hills, and you still haven't gotten to the freaking point.
Yeah, okay, I get your message. Losing containment to destroy those ships would be suicide for you. My question is, would you be willing to do that, if we had no other way to stop those ships from coming to Earth?
No.
Hoping there would be more information coming after this one-word reply, I waited. He didn't speak, and his avatar was frozen in place. That would have frightened me before, but I understood it simply meant he was busy and not paying attention to his avatar.
Hey, I cleared my throat.
Could you give me some details about that?
No is not the answer I was hoping to hear.
Gosh, Joey, the avatar came back to life.
Of course I would do anything for you, my bestest friend forever, he gushed.
Oh, gag me. No, you dum-dum, I have no intention of sacrificing myself for you filthy monkeys.
I call bullshit on that, Skippy. During our second mission, when we got ambushed by a squadron of Theranan destroyers, you offered to sacrifice yourself so the Dutchman could get away.
Uh-huh, and as you have mentioned several times, my plan back then would not have worked. Regardless, I was not intending to actually sacrifice my existence, because no weapons the Theranan possess can hurt me. The worst I would have endured is going dormant for a long time. Truly, a million years drifting isolated in space would not be any worse than having this conversation with you, so
great. Just great.
We can't really count on you, can we?
You can count on me to help you, dum-dum. What you can't count on is me being willing to do something short-sighted and stupid just to make a dramatic gesture. A gesture like that would be useless anyway.
Useless. It would stop a pair of powerful warships from
blah, blah,
blah.
He waved a hand dismissively.
It would stop that pair of warships, you ignorant monkey.
It would also prevent me from being of any use to you in a future crisis, and there is always another crisis, Joe.
You don't know that. If we can stop the Maxulks, Joe, seriously, try to use that sack of mush in your skull, please.
Me losing containment would, as I have told you before, release a truly massive amount of energy. It would be like setting off fireworks. Every starfaring species in the galaxy would be sending ships to investigate what the hell happened in that location. They would position ships at remote distances to capture photons from the moments before the explosion, and they would see two Maxalt ships were there before they suddenly became subatomic particles. The Maxalts would be alarmed to learn that the two ships they sent to Earth had been subjected to an overkill of energy, and you can be sure those rotten kiddies would send half their fleet to Earth to make sure they found out exactly why their ships got blown up.
Shit. You're right. I didn't think of that.
They don't bother, I'll say the duh for myself. Are you happy now?
Not happy, but I do understand why you don't want to destroy those ships by losing containment. Sorry about that. I shouldn't have asked. Oh, hell. I'll keep trying to think of another way to stop those ships.
Yep. That is the second reason I won't offer to sacrifice myself.
What?
Because, dum-dum, if I offer to do that, you will get lazy and stop trying to think of a better idea. You think best under pressure, Joe. This is about the most pressure you can get, so you'd better get working, huh?
Crap. Yes. And you're right. Even if we stop these ships, there is always going to be another freaking problem we need you to fix for us. Like, in 60 years, aliens will discover the wormhole near Earth is not really dormant and they will be coming to investigate.
Sure, that too. However, what I meant is, I can't sacrifice myself for one planet of primitive monkeys because I have a higher purpose, a purpose you told me about, so really, you screwed yourself there, Joe.
I had no idea what he was talking about.
Crap, what did I do? You convinced me that the galaxy needs me to stop rogue elder AIs from causing havoc. Remember? You gave quite an inspiring speech.
Shit. Yeah, I do remember.
That speech wasn't all just bullshit to make me feel better, was it?
No. I sorta lied.
Damn it, sometimes I wish my stupid brain would just shut the hell up and stop getting me in trouble.
No, I guess I mostly meant what I said. You may be the only force capable of stopping another rogue AI.
See? Isn't saving the entire galaxy from rogue AIs more important than a barrel of monkeys on one miserable mudball of a planet?
Tapping the patches on my uniform top, I shook my head. Not to me, it isn't. See these patches? My responsibility is to humanity, the United States, to the U.S. Army, even if I am a mutinous renegade pirate. I am not responsible for the safety of the whole gosh-darned Milky Way galaxy.
Joe, you stole this ship. Right now, you are a pirate without authorization from anyone on Earth. Don't tell me you're still clinging to—
I am clinging to the hope of being reinstated when I get home, Skippy, or at least not being thrown in Leavenworth prison for the rest of my life.
Okay, let's not get off subject. We need another way to stop those ships, so I'm going back to zero and starting over. There must be a way to do it.
That's the spirit, Joey. I do not see any way for you to destroy two warships that could crush the Flying Dutchman like a giant stepping on an ant. But hey, you should be like that ant, right?
I should have known better, but because I'm stupid, I asked, what ant?
Everyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant, but he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes.
Come on, Joe, sing it with me.
Right then, I was thinking that would be an excellent time for Skippy to lose containment.
After the complicated and dangerous tasks of getting a Maxalt's dropship and stealing a set of blank pixies, I was dreading the next stop of ransacking a data relay station to discover the flight plan of the two target ships. Hopefully, we would actually get those flight plans, because Skippy cautioned me that he could not guarantee every relay station had that information. We might have to go to several relay stations to get the data, increasing our risk each time. If the flight plan data was not provided to automated stations, then we were screwed, because no way could we approach a station that had a Maxalt's crew. Following Skippy's plan to copy the pixies of a real Maxalt ship, we jumped the Dutchman in several 100,000 kilometers away from our target relay station. Captain Reed and I took the beer can away from the ship and the Maxalt's dropship, then our Frankenstein space truck jumped to wait about 30 light seconds away. Wrapped in an already sophisticated Maxalt stealth field that Skippy had tinkered with to make even more perfect, our dropship approached the station until we were 200,000 miles away, where we used the reactionless drive to bring us to a stop relative to the imaginary point in space where the station's sensor field coverage dropped off enough for Skippy to be comfortable we would not be detected without an active scan. We called our new dropship a Panther because it was a super healthy hunter, and because the Maxalts sort of looked like big cats.
Sir, Reed whispered to me as we shut down the ultra-quiet drive. We need to get more of these.
This thing is awesome.
I hear you, Fireball. I winked. Let me know if you find a place where we can pick up a certified pre-owned Panther on credit, or a place we can get spare parts.
We had to fly the dropship very carefully and gently, despite the parts we wrenched off the other ships in the cavern under the moon. We had no replacements for some vital systems. Not all the components of the craft were working properly. Some were not working at all. The life support system had been pulled from an old Krestang dragon that was no longer useful because Skippy had been unable to get the Panther's life support working. After Skippy confirmed the station had not reacted to our presence, we waited. That particular data relay station had been chosen because it had only sparse traffic, giving us a measure of confidence that there would not be a whole lot of ships stopping by while we were inside the station. My major concern was not about the station detecting our stealthy little Panther. It was about the station wondering why a Maxalt starship had jumped in and quickly jumped away without identifying itself. Skippy had adjusted the Dutchman's stealth field and jump drive signature to make it look like a Maxalt's fleet auxiliary ship, a lightly armed support vessel that would be no threat to the station. He assured me that a ship not identifying itself was unusual, but not so unusual that the station would activate defenses or send an alarm message. And once he had taken control of that AI, he could erase all memory of our presence. So we waited. And waited. Reed and I took turns napping in between duty shifts. The Panther would not be doing much flying on this mission, so I had not seen any need to risk the lives of more than two people. Reed was easy to get along with. We played cards or Scrabble to pass the time, or we both gave each other space and read books. The Panther was small on the outside compared even to a Dragon A dropship, but the cabin was about the same size as our smaller Krestang model, and we had enough room not to get on each other's nerves. Reed was a much better companion than Mr. Nuki had been. Plus, she was less likely to accidentally explode. We hung out in empty space, Skippy constantly alert for incoming ships or anything that might make the station detect us. Only once did we need to move the ship, because a small cloud of dust was drifting through the area, and the station would get suspicious if any tiny dust particles bounced off our shields. Other than that one bit of excitement, it was pretty dull. Until two Maxalt starships jumped in without warning. I was on duty in the pilot seat working on a crossword puzzle that I swear Skippy had rigged to make it impossible for me to complete when he sounded a soft bell-like chime.
Joe, we have company.
Before I woke Reed from sleep, I checked the display. The two ships were less than 5,000 kilometers from the station, and they had their own sensor fields turned off to avoid interfering with the station. Reed. I shook her shoulder gently, and she was instantly awake. What? She asked, blinking sleep away from her eyes. Pointing to the display, I let her take in the situation. Two ships, I explained. Skippy. Damn. One of those ships is big. It's a monster, I whispered. That is a bit of good luck, Joe. That big ship is a support ship, sort of a mobile space dock for repairing battle-damaged ships that can't make it back to a planetary base or are urgently needed. We are in little danger from that thing. The other ship is a destroyer assigned to escort the space dock. Now, be quiet, Knucklehead. I am aligning our pixies to match the destroyer's identification code. It was easy to be quiet since I was pressing my lips together so they wouldn't tremble from fear. Being stupid, as I am, I zoomed in the image to see those imposing ships like they were right on top of us. That was a bad idea, and I caught a disapproving look from Reed. Switching to the tactical display helped. If the Maxalts detected us, we did not need to explode one of the nukes we had brought from Earth. Instead, we could overload the Panther's own reactor. That thought was really not very comforting. The two ships hung near the relay station for only 16 minutes. Then they jumped away as abruptly as they had arrived.
We're clear, Joe, Skippy reported. Sending data to the Dutchman. Our pixies are aligned and ready.
Unclenching my jaw so I could speak, I lifted my hands away from the pilot console and nodded toward Reed to show the spacecraft was hers.
Outstanding. Reed, take us to the rendezvous point.
It took 37 hours to rendezvous with the Flying Dutchman, flying very gently not only to avoid strain on the vital components of the Panther, but mostly to avoid hard maneuvers that might be detected by the relay station. After the Panther was aboard, the ship accelerated for another 6 hours, then jumped away. Our outbound jump was from a distance sufficiently far from the station that the controlling AI likely would not find anything alarming or suspicious about our mystery ship. We then waited another 5 hours, time during which the ship decelerated to match course and speed with the relay station.
Part of the reason for the delay was that Skippy knew from listening to the data exchange between the space dock ship and the relay station that another ship was scheduled to stop at the relay station, and we wanted to give that ship plenty of time to get clear of the area. We jumped in near the station again, this time much closer at less than 6,000 kilometers. Skippy adjusted our stealth field and jump drive signature to make us look like the destroyer that had been there recently. The station immediately pinged us and demanded identification. Despite Skippy's well-demonstrated awesomeness, I had my fingers crossed as he sent back the destroyer's ID code with our copied pixies. The station acknowledged our ID and expressed mild surprise that the destroyer had come back so soon. For us, Skippy replied that another ship had been assigned to escort the mobile space dock, and we had come back to the station to install a critical upgrade. He included the proper authorization codes, also stolen from the real destroyer, and the station sort of shrugged if AIs are capable of shrugging. This was good timing, the station said, as no ships were scheduled to arrive within the next 84 hours. A docking bay was ready for us. Skippy told me the AI sounded lonely. With a finger hovering over the button to send our new quality pre-owned Max Oaks dropship toward the relay station, I had to first calm my nerves as the Panther approached the relay station under the control of the station's AI. We were not really under the station's control, but Skippy let the AI think it was in control because that was standard procedure. Skippy, you are certain the station AI will not activate defenses when it sees us get out of the dropship wearing Krystang armor? I am certain that will not be a problem for two reasons. First, the Max Oaks are supremely, stupidly confident in the security of their Pixie system. Once we authenticate ourselves, we will be trusted without question. Considering what the Max Oaks think they know about the physical laws of the universe, they are correct in being confident their security is unbreakable. They did not count on me spoiling the party. Second, the station AI will not see you wearing Krystang armor, you dum-dum, because I will be spoofing the sensors in the docking bay. While I will not yet have complete control of the AI until you jack me in, I will be able to control the data that AI sees. I already told you all this. Were you not listening? I was listening. I'm making sure nothing changed so that you didn't forget something. Forget? Me? He was insulted. Unlike you meat sacks, my memory is... Your memory is not the problem. I wanted to know if you absentmindedly forgot to consider something. Oh. I guess that is fair. Let me review the facts again. Nope. No. Can't think of anything I did not consider. Great. I allowed a bit of the tension in my shoulders to melt away. Of course, I also did not consider that fighter dropships would be conducting flight maneuvers at the moon base, or that the crawler would be taking a different route, or that the garage section of the base would not have a connection to the base AI. Or, damn it, Skippy. I'm just saying, maybe I'm not the best person to ask about whether I have all bases covered, you know? Crap. Well, I shot a guilty look at Reed in the pilot seat. It's too late now to change the plan. Yes, sirree, Bob, it is, Skippy babbled nervously. Hokey dokey, we are committed now, on track for the docking bay outer marker. He was talking way too much, a sign of his internal tension. Hey, speaking of being on tracks, this reminds me of a song. All aboard! I... Skippy, I shouted over him while he continued to sing. Damn it, Ozzy is not really the best choice when we're trying to... Are you even listening to me? Going off the rails on a crazy train! I'm going off Skippy! Okay, jeez Louise, I try to inject a little culture into... We are inside the docking bay, you little shithead. Do your thing with the sensors. What thing? Oh, yeah, got it. While he worked, he must have been singing to himself because I heard snippets of Ozzy like, I've listened to preachers, I've listened to fools, I've listened to dropouts who make their own rules. And I kept my mouth shut because me talking would be even more distracting to him. Plus, for some reason I couldn't understand, his Ozzy was much better than when he sang anything else, so I was kind of getting into it. Okay, Joe, sensors are under my control. Damn, this AI is a chatty Cathy. It must be really bored and lonely. You need to jack me in so I can make it shut the hell up. It was easy. After all my anxiety and the effort we had gone through to get a proper Max Oaks dropship and a set of pixies, the actual work inside the station was easy. I was wearing a flight suit because Skippy was concerned the weight of powered armor boots clomping across the deck of the docking bay might make the station AI suspicious when its cameras were showing an unarmed Max Oaks casually walking toward the inner door. To match what the cameras were showing, I tried to walk casually, using long strides to mimic the gait of a Max Oaks that was taller than me. Then, when I reached the airlock, I plugged the little gizmo into a data port near the floor, and within 2 seconds, Skippy flashed a little green light in the upper right corner of my helmet display.
I'm in, Joe. Damn, the next time I have to hack into something, can we choose a species that does not have good wireless security? Needing to physically jack me into a data port is a pain in the ass.
I'm not a big fan of it either. You never have trouble hacking into the Theranon or into computer systems on Earth.
That is because you monkeys have zero data security, Joe, and the Pinhead Theranon do not realize how vulnerable they are to their systems being infiltrated by someone who gains access through their cybernetic implants.
Those little green idiots think they only have to be worried about someone hacking into them through their ship AIs, not the other direction. Bunch of morons.
And that's it. We're good, Joe. I got the flight plan data. Erasing our tracks now. We should be out of here pronto, in case an unscheduled ship shows up to spoil the party.
Don't keep me in suspense, Skippy. I had a catch in my throat.
Are we too late?
My greatest fear was the target ships had already transited through the wormhole in Ruha territory and were now jumping through dark interstellar space toward Earth. If that were the case, we had zero chance of intercepting them somewhere in that vast expanse of space, and our renegade mission was all for nothing.
Nope, dude, we're good. Those ships have not left their home base yet.
I told you the Maxalts wanted to examine other wormholes that have exhibited odd behavior before they launch for Earth. The last ship has returned from collecting data, and there was a conference to analyze the results. I unplugged from the data port and walked casually back toward the Panther.
What has taken them so long to launch?
Because during the conference, the Maxalts sent their results to the Rindaloo to get the Spider's thoughts on what might be causing the odd wormhole behavior. The Spider's just replied 2 weeks ago, which is super fast for them. They must be worried. Anyway, what you want to hear is the target ships will not launch for 27 days.